This is a Dece World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the nerdiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this because I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
If whoever tosses the midget the furthest gets to be the mayor.
Get ready for the social hour.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for hanging out for another episode, guys. It's just me in the studio, but fear not. You're not going to have to listen to just me yak for the next hour. What I'm bringing you today, a couple weeks ago, I got to do an interview with a radio show on KYRS called Art Hour. It was a lot of fun. Got to talk about how I got into comedy, how it affects your life, how you try not to kill yourself when you're doing comedy, all the fun stuff of stand-up comedy. Philip Kobzinski was with me, so check out this episode, guys. I'm just going to bring that to you. Excuse me. You're going to get that whole hour. It was a really fun show to do. I suggest you check it out. It's called Art Hour on KYRS. KYRS. It's a local Spokane radio station, kind of public. Not public access, public owned. It's good. It's fun. You should listen. They have a lot of great shows on that network. But I got to do that, and I just want to bring that to you guys, let you guys check it out in case you didn't get to hear it when it aired the first time. We will be back next week with Sam Vidovich is coming back to talk movies. That'll be fun. And you guys know how this goes if you've been listening for any length of time. We here at the Social Hour, coming up on spring and summer, my calendar gets more chaotic than ever. So it is difficult for me to bring you a studio show every single week. So, you know, some weeks it'll be Jeremy, Sophie, and I, the crew, with a guest. Some weeks I'll be on the road. I'm going to be bringing you more brewery shows coming up as I do every spring and summer. So look forward to that. Lots of great stuff, guys. So check it out. You can listen to this if you are listening the day this episode comes out. Keep in mind that this Friday in Ellensburg at the Iron Horse Brewery, myself and Michael Gladsmeyer, the nearly famous duo, will be performing. Comedian Tony Russell will be opening for us. That's going to be an awesome show. Then this Sunday, the Drink and Debate at the Spokane Comedy Club. And then back here on 420, that is April 20th, not weed related at all, we'll be at the High Neighbor doing comedy. That's going to be Ronnie Taylor, Steve Johnson, Lucas Prom, and myself. So come check out that show also, guys. So yeah, with no further ado, I'm just going to give you this episode of Art Hour. Take a listen, and we will see you back next week with Sam Vidovich, Jeremy Person, Sophie Tomey. The whole crew's going to be here. All right, guys, and enjoy.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is KYRS 88.1, 92.3 FM, Spokane, Medical Lake. And this is Art Hour. I am one of the hosts, Mike Malsom.
I'm the other host, Eric Woodard. And we are with our guests.
We have a guest today. We have Dees Casillas.
You nailed it.
And Philip Kopczynski.
Yes, that one's even harder.
So I'm amazed I got that one out the first time.
Nice job.
Anyway, two local artists, and we are here to find out more about what they do in the challenging profession of comedians in here. And I will just say, I got both of your names. I was on Spokane Arts, and I was talking with one of the people that worked there, and I saw The Makers, a short documentary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Had both you and a couple of the comedians were featured on that little short documentary, and I said, we'd like to get them on the show, and that's how I got a hold of you, Dees.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'll just start with you, Dees. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in comedy.
Bad parents. comedy was probably a weirder road for me because my first stand-up set was over a decade ago, and I didn't do any stand-up for a long time. I did a lot of comedy writing, sketch comedy, some improv and stuff, and then in the last couple of years got back into stand-up more full-time. I mean, when I first moved to Spokane, I'm from LA originally, there was kind of a B club here and not near as much going on or opportunities we have now with the actual, like the big Spokane comedy club that's opened up 3 years ago now.
Three years ago in April.
So, and that changed the game, I think, for everyone in, you know, pushing our, I think, how we work, watching a real club that, you know, they owned a club in Tacoma for years. So it forced us all to kind of realize what bigger cities were doing.
It's hard to compare. I mean, the Spokane Comedy Club is an A-list club. So as far as clubs go, you don't get a better club than what they have. I mean, the talent they bring in and just the level of sophistication.
Here in Spokane.
Yeah. Oh. And it's you know, if you live in Spokane and you go to that club, it's you don't realize that, you know, the clubs, you know, two states over are, you know, just kind of a ramshackle thing in the back of a bowling alley or
right,
whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's clubs that pop up in all different places. And a lot of times they need a second business to prop
right.
it up. But they're, I mean, they operate fully as an A-list club. They bring in A-list talent. And it's about as good as you get. I mean, they're you know, kind of minimal standard is a Tonight Show set.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
So rarely do you see someone who's headlining that club that doesn't at least have a Conan or a Tonight Show or Jimmy Fallon or whatever. So
Dees, you've been doing this for about 10 years in terms of either writing or...
Yeah, if you add it all up, it's been about 10 years since my first stand-up set. And then I did, like I said, went to I was doing comedy writing for a long time and sketch, improv, stuff like that. And then in the last few years got back into when the comedy club opened here really is when I started getting back into that. And yeah, it's just kind of exploded from there. Really, a lot of that opens up a lot of doors if you're willing to work at it a little bit.
What kind of sketch writing were you doing?
Just some personal stuff. You guys have the. I caught myself there. I do a podcast where I say terrible things. I'm just not used to.
But you can bleep it out.
Yeah, that's fine. You got the dumb button.
You believe it.
No, we just. Tons of sketches over the years. I've got, you know, a million sitting around that we've done. We still do them. I'm trying to do at least once a month some sort of sketch output. So
now when you say we, who do you do this with?
I've got a couple people that I work with, specifically other comics in the area, mostly Tony Russell, Lucas Prom, Sophie Tomey, Ronnie Taylor, Folger Emerson. Those are the people I work with the most, doing sketch comedy, writing, filming.
Shout out to Ronnie Taylor, a former student of mine.
Oh yeah, she's my cousin.
Oh yeah, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're kind of related.
Well,
then.
Yeah, we're it's funny, we're cousins through marriage. We we've been friends forever, and then we found out recently that my great aunt is her grandma's sister. Yeah,
is that weird or not?
Yeah, you need an FBI flowchart to figure that out. I mean, so yeah, we've been friends forever, and yeah, then we found out we're related through marriage.
Yeah, you can still get married in Utah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's only first cousins. They can't get married in Utah, man.
They didn't say no. They're still thinking about that. They're like, we got to sleep on that one. We're not going to jump right into it.
So where do you do your stuff? You say you do something about once a month.
Yeah, I mean, we film. I mean, I film a lot of stuff in my house. I've got a lot of cobbled together a lot of, you know, soft boxes, nice cameras, audio stuff, everything to film, put together nice stuff. And then, you know, sometimes it's kind of on the go guerrilla, just fast to get stuff done and content out there. But I mean, really, as much as I love stand-up comedy, I've always said if I had a choice, I would just be sitting in a writer's room for the rest of my life. That's my ultimate goal.
So if you're filming that stuff, I'm sure you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, go to Dees Casillas, spelled the Christian way, like in the Bible. it's just my name. You can go to Dees Comedy. That's DEECE comedy.com, and all my it's got links to my YouTube page. I do a weekly podcast and a bunch of other stuff. So,
and what's your podcast? Is that
it's called The Social Hour?
Okay,
new episodes every Wednesday on Dees Comedy and syndicated by Pants Pending Studios. Check it out. It's a great time. That's all I have to say about
it. And is it a half hour podcast?
It's we do about 90 minutes to 2 hours actually, and depending on the guest. But yeah, we do about 90 minutes on average, I'd say.
Cool. Philip, how about you? How'd you get your start? How long you been doing this business?
Yeah, man. I don't know if it's a business or like a midlife crisis, dude. I started at 33, doing open mics at 33, and then started doing the road a little more seriously about 2 years ago. I was doing gigs, you know, right away, but working the road a couple times a month. Probably about 2 years ago, and in the past year, really, you know, trying to put together a real schedule. I grew up in the wild. I grew up on Micah Peak Mountain, which is just south of here. So I grew up totally in the sticks. Just absolute isolation. So it was a lot of talking to myself. because you can't hear yourself on a four-wheeler, you know, so you're screaming at the trees, man. You can just start coming up with a lot of ideas. And my sister was Down syndrome, so we would, we couldn't really play chess very well or whatever. So we would just make each other laugh all the time. And I think that's probably how it started. And then I went to college for, you know, theater and English writing, and then I was a journalist for a while, and then went into business. And I knew I wanted to do stand-up, but I didn't want to. I just knew so many stand-ups whose lives were an absolute mess, and and I had kids really young, so I knew that if opportunities happened, because travel is a part of it. I mean, you have to travel. You can't especially once you have a headlining set and you're trying to promote your own shows, I can't be performing, you know, but maybe once a year, because it's hard to draw. You'll sort of saturate the market for your own draw if you do that.
Yeah,
so
how many times people want to see?
Yeah, yeah. How many times can I be like, come out and come see my band play, man?
We're doing all the cover hits. All those hits you know and love.
Yeah. So I mean, now I want to be able to bring new material if I'm doing the club or if I'm putting on my own show somewhere. I mean, there's a lot of cool independent venues in Spokane. You got that really cool place.
The Big Dipper?
The Big Dipper is very cool. It's kind of a punk rock. Bartlett. You know, so people can produce their own shows there. There was some of that happening. But now at the comedy club, they've got their own marketing system in place. They've got people who are fans of the comedy club maybe have seen me, because I used to MC there all the time. When they started, I just would MC there as often as possible. And I was there all the time. And I still hang out there all the time if I don't have a gig. I mean, I drove back from Richland last night, and if I had left earlier, I probably would have caught the end of last night's show, you know, just because
your head would have exploded.
Oh yeah, I would have loved that.
Talking
yeah.
about the flat Earth.
Thing. Yeah, it's a lot. It was a conspiracy theorist last night comic. Yeah, I would have loved that.
I was losing my mind listening to him talking to him last night.
These dudes believe in the flat Earth, and they're yeah. like legitimate comics.
Like
and
space doesn't exist.
So they legitimately believe
they think
it.
Space doesn't exist. It's yeah. a conspiracy by the government. I mean, yeah, yeah, dude, that's a world you get. My wife's I keep constantly telling her issues I have. I'm like, oh man, I don't know why this is happening in comedy. She's like, God, these guys sound like. My wife is she's a trained elementary school teacher, so this is her exact words. These guys sound like a bunch of doof butts. And
oh, wow.
Oh, man,
words.
Dump button. Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah. You're going to have to beep that out, guys. Yeah. So he's like, these guys are a bunch of doof butts. I'm like, you don't know the world I'm in. Everybody's a doof butt.
I wonder, because if you take that seriously, how do you make comedy out of flat Earth?
Oh, well... I mean, I have a bit about flat Earth. It's those people who believe the Earth
right,
is flat.
Right, but you make fun of people.
Dude, sometimes it's just right? about blowing minds, bro.
Yeah, right. I mean, you got to wonder if comedy attracts that kind of person, or if we become that person. Like, which one it is.
There
is
you
the metamorphosis?
Go.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
so
in
funny.
Which side of the spectrum am I on right now? Like,
what's your joke about flat earthers?
Oh, it's like a 5-minute bit, but there's just this guy, like, it just blows my mind. There was this guy whose plan was to go like he build this homemade bootleg white trash rocket and go 1,300 feet up in the air. That was his plan to prove that the Earth is flat. And I'm always like, yeah, 1,300 feet. So, you know, about as tall as the third tallest building in Spokane. Like, that's your proof. Like, just get a Southwest ticket for $59 and go 35,000 feet up in the air. And you can, you know, the Earth is still round. Yeah, you get a free cocktail even when you do that. So. Yeah, it's just it blows my mind, the things that. But I mean, you know, that's I think that's part of the fun of it. The idea that these the crazy ideas people have.
Oh my God! So you talked about the road. How far out do you guys go? What are the? I mean, you were in Richland yesterday, right?
Oh yeah, man, that's where dreams come true, dude.
Yeah. So how far out do you go?
I mean, depends on what I get into. I regularly go from Colorado to Northern California. But then, you know, it's like, it's kind of where the opportunities arise. So I'll start working in, New Jersey. There's a club that'll hire me there now. So now hopefully, like, from there, I can extend to Boston. And same with like the Midwest, you know, if there's, the Spokane Comedy Club owners own a club in like Appleton, you know, and if they book me there, then hopefully, you know, try to extend over to Madison it's kind of a slow build. It's almost like wherever I have me. So I'll go anywhere in the country right now.
So you're doing this full time.
Why are you a booker? Sometimes, you know, it's funny. I hate admitting, because a lot of bookers want to be like, I want to see you struggle, you know. Okay. And I don't know.
Believe me, I'm struggling. Yeah. I'm in my 30s doing comedy. Things did not go as planned.
I don't know who I am.
This
is what I tell people. I have a lot of wheelings and dealings. I've got other things. I was like the some comics have called me the pig that built his house out of bricks. So, because I knew that, you know, so I've always just, you know, invested in other stuff when I always lived well, you know, way under my means. So I do still work, but yeah, comedy is basically, I do comedy about 2 to 3 times on the road each month. Yeah.
Oh. How about you, Deese? How far do you go, and how often do you go?
On the road, you know, I've got a pretty good circuit in the Northwest I hit. I go into Montana quite a bit. Usually do 2 runs into Montana twice a year, kind of spring and fall. The last one was, I think, like almost 2 weeks, just hitting place in Montana. And then I go over to the West Side quite a bit. I'll be in, Tacoma and Seattle almost all of May. Around the area, but mostly the Northwest right now. I got a pretty good circuit I get through, and I'm at the club almost every single Sunday. I've got a show there at the local club, and then usually I'm there one weekend a month anyway. So it's a little more difficult for me to do long hauls on the road because I have responsibilities. I got to be back at the club and do stuff here. But, you know, I put together a spring thing most of May and June and be on the road through the Northwest. We've got stuff in Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Montana. We're trying to put something together in like Nevada, Carson City, Reno area. So
you kind of already answered this next question, but what's the end game? So let's say
try not to kill myself, for OD.
So far, so good.
Yeah, ideally before my sex scandal breaks.
You've been putting sex tapes out there, and nobody's watching.
Well, I know. One day, still zero clicks. Yeah,
so you said it would be writing.
I mean, ideally, I think at this point I would. It's one of those things. Comedy is not. You can't do one thing. Everything trickles into the bucket now. You have to do a podcast. You have to do sketch. You have to do stand-up. You have to do writing. Like, that's the only way, I think, in the end game to make it. Very few people can make it by just doing stand-up. Or, you know, you have to kind of have all these different plates spinning and, you know, get some YouTube channel and some weird online show you do where you get high between two bushes and talk to folding chairs or whatever whatever it is. But the... I mean, at this point, I like being on stage enough where I would continue doing it. But, I mean, I've written shows I want to develop in film and things like that. That's ultimately
what I... So is that
kind
of your dream project? Maybe
ideally, I'd
love
to, write and produce the shows I've written. So I guess I've already written them. I just need to produce them and film them.
Yeah. How about you, Phil?
Oh, man. I mean, I hate saying that I want to be a road comic, but, you know, because that's... That's what people are afraid of. That's the cautionary tale, is that you are just a guy that only does the road. But if you can build a draw, I mean, that's where it's at. And you start looking at people that are in these writer rooms, and it's like, yo, man, you have a real job. I didn't get into stand-up comedy to have a real job, dude.
Town to town with that sad walking away music from The Incredible Hulk every time.
Big bag that says jokes on it.
Bindle over your shoulder.
Yeah.
It'd be like a bindle, not a backpack. Yeah, backpack.
Well, you got backpack money.
Where'd you play last night?
Hierarchy.
Fucking Carnegie Hall over here, humble brag. The backpack.
I'm trying to build. I'm starting to headline more places, so I'm trying to build email lists and you know, so that people try to have a draw, that people come back, because I know a lot of comics that have done that, and it's like then the people come back to see them, and it's almost like checking in with a friend. They're like, "What's this guy been up to for a year?" And that's how a lot of road comics work. So in a lot of ways, I'm like. You know, when people are like, "Well, what's your dream deal?" I'm like, "I'm at the dream. I just the money is still the dream." I'm not even like, I don't even want to be rich. I just want to, you know,
be away
from
your family more.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't want to get scared. Like, if my water heater breaks, you know what I mean? How'd you wind up homeless?
Yeah.
My garage door broke. So it's that's why I also like keeping a. Some kind of other form of income, you know, I don't ever see giving that up. I mean, I do some acting, but that's such a, you know, that's such a Hail Mary pass every time you go to an audition or submit a tape. But half the time I feel like you get cast because they're like, "I like the way these guys' eyebrows look." And then they're like, "He'd be great for a commercial." And so they.
Well, I mean, very few straight white men in their 30s try out for things in Spokane,
right?
Right,
yeah.
That's a rarity in Spokane. Yeah,
yeah,
you're really Anglo-Saxon white guy.
Well, you do become more castable as you get older, just because when they're looking, they're like, "We want," like it used to be like I would get cast for like, "Hey, we're looking for a young youth pastor," or whatever, you know. And now it's like, "We're looking for a down and out."
a disheveled, unloved,
desperate,
just got
type.
Fired, probably has a drinking
and
problem.
And you were the first person we thought.
Yeah.
About.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was this agent that I have now.
They said dial it back a little when they saw it. little on the nose.
Here, you
little on the nose.
Put that bindle down, dude. You're committing too hard. like most of the parts I get, when the character descriptions are like washed up, psychotic, I'm like, "She gets my look, man. She understands my aura." I do like acting a lot. I know a lot of actors. I went to school for theater, so a lot of people I went to school with moved to New York or LA or became theater actors, and in a lot of ways, it's like stand-up. It's whatever opportunities you create for yourself. I mean, Deese, you know, produces a lot of his own shows. I've started to produce a lot of my own shows, and you risk your own money, but there's better reward, and you're in control of all the of every element of it. You know, a lot of times you go to a club and you're like, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows who the opener is going to be? Is it just some random, you know, person that they just picked up from open mic that's going to bomb for 5 minutes? Or, you know, or if I get to produce my own show, I know that I get to book my own opener, and I know that, you know, I will control where I stay. I mean, there's a club down in Florida.
Which Motel 6 I stay?
Yeah.
I get to choose.
Dude, there's a club down in Florida. This is in Orlando, and I was looking at their website, and they have like 13 locations, and I was like, oh man, I'm going to do a guest spot. I'm going to get in with these clubs. It's a big deal. Look at their website. It looks great. I show up. It's in the back of a bowling alley. The headliner's like, I'm like, do they put you up? He's like, dude, I'm not staying there. Like they don't have air conditioning at the comedy condo in Florida in the summer, man. Oh, like, man. He's like, I'd rather stay in that office right there. You know, the clubs are a great system for exposure in the sense that they have usually built-in regulars, and you get and you get to be in one place for, you know, 3 nights or however long. But I think the best opportunities are ones that you create yourself. And living in Spokane, you have to. It's not like if you live in Indianapolis or if you live in the South or you live on the East Coast, within a 3 or 4 hour radius, you might have 20 clubs.
Oh, yeah.
Here, you got 4 in Seattle. One in Boise.
One in Portland.
Yeah, a couple in Portland, and then, you know, one in Spokane. So, and then you go up to Canada, and there's a higher concentration. But, you're on the tundra up in Canada. And so, you know, a lot of what I've seen people do in this part of the world is, you just do winery, brewery shows, small theaters. And it's a lot of fun, you know, because people are like, oh, my gosh, this guy came to our town.
Yeah.
You know we exist. I've had people in small towns be like, okay, rate us against other small towns. and I think in some ways it helps your chops, like, because you got to toughen up a little bit to do stand-up. I mean, it is a difficult thing to do. And if you're doing a set and there's a dude with no teeth in the front row, cross-eyed, who's like, they canceled karaoke for this.
Yeah, right, yeah. They had bingo tonight.
Yeah, man, come on. Yeah. Like, I think it definitely helps your chops a little bit to do those kind of gigs out in the wild.
Oh, man. One of my biggest fears about comedy is if I ever did it, which I'm probably never going to, but hecklers. Like, you're talking about that guy in the front row. It seems like crowds are actually pretty polite. Is
that
true?
I would say for the most part, yeah. Most people's fear is hecklers, and it's way more common to have somebody just having a conversation, being disruptful. Right. And
like, why are you here if you're going to be talking to your friend?
Yeah. Exactly.
While I'm up here doing my job.
Yeah, and that's – but, you know, I think a lot of the – you know, a lot of shows – that's why I'm trying – you're like, what's your goal? Like, Deez is like, I want to be a writer. I'm like, I want to be at shows where people know there's a show happening.
where they turn off the TVs and don't let people play pool for 45 minutes.
Yeah, I would say in the past year, I haven't done a single gig where a TV's on, and I'm like, I made it! Yeah. Dude, they put a cover on the pool table, man. I know how to treat performers here.
Well, it is crazy, though, because you do, like, you know, I know Phil has the same experience. You do comedy clubs, and it's almost like cheating because everything is geared for you to be doing comedy.
Yeah, everything's for success.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, like, you can, it's like a DUI checkpoint. The only thing you can do is screw it up, right? Like, it's on you to screw it up. But when you're doing these bar shows and things, I mean, I did a show in like Livingston, Montana last year. It's just this tiny town in Montana, and at this bar, but it was packed out. The people loved it. You know, they were a little wild, but it's like like Phil was saying, makes you, I think, better at what you do because you have to. Someone didn't even know there was comedy there. You have to be like, are you here for comedy? Like, you look at you like, no, I was here because it has $2, you know, vodka shots tonight. And I know the owner, you know, that's it's always great. I don't know. Hecklers are easy too, though. I think
most people who are rude enough to heckle are typically pretty easy to deal with. When I first started, I would actually get a little too mean.
And too far!
Yeah, dude, I would go a little too mean. I think he's laughing because he's been in some of those shows. Yeah. And so what happens at first, it's kind of funny, and then people are like, whoa, dude, this guy is crazy. He's disheveled, a psycho. Yeah. He should be in a commercial replace one. But I think most of the time, so now my thing is kind of like, hey, man, are you okay? Like, yeah. let's talk about why you're doing that. And so, and I think a lot of that is just stage time. You learn how to relax on stage a little more, and then you can kind of talk with people. And so, yeah,
yes, that was jarring when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, usually the biggest problems that I have are people that don't even know they're being a problem because they're just like talking super loud, or they don't know they don't know how to behave in public. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, there's shows I've done where that I've produced, and then, you know, there's a guy in the audience, and I'll be, you know, just keeps talking. I'll go around, I'm like, hey, man, we need to be quiet. I have to tell him a couple times. I'm like, we're gonna have to ask you to leave if you can't be quiet. He's like, no, I'm helping him. And I'm like, to the comic, I'm like, no, I mean, he does this every night. I'm pretty sure he doesn't need your help to get through his 40-minute set here.
I mean, I think in bigger markets, you know, you might have a meaner heckler, you know, someone who's like, yo, you suck. I genuinely think that your comedy is terrible, and I'd like you to leave right now. Like, wow, all right. Well, I haven't experienced that, but I think, after a while, you get a tough enough skin, and you're like, okay, well, I suck, then maybe you should leave.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of teaching, you know? You worry about losing control of that class, because I teach high school.
Remember that.
And you worry about that, and then after a while, you develop that court sense, or whatever you call it.
Yeah, right.
You just say, I think I can handle
this. Well, and certainly as a teacher, if you get angry, you lose.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and you have to remember that most of the people in the room are on your side.
Right.
So just don't lose them.
Well,
right?
That's
it's because if you're too much of a jerk about it, or if you look like you can't handle it, they'll say maybe this guy.
Yeah,
maybe
they lose that
as a teacher or a comedian.
Right.
The one of the ways I found that I like to deal with hecklers, you touched on it there, was getting the. I don't really do anything so much as get the rest of the crowd to turn on that person. If you can get the rest of the crowd to really like boo that person, like I'd be like, oh man, you know, I liked you, but apparently everyone else is. hates you right now, so you know I and that's one of the easiest ways too, if you can get everyone else on your side, which most of the crowd is,
they
and then
are.
Just
that's
get them
there,
to turn on that person, and then they can tend to take care of itself.
I'd want to know if you guys are at the level now where you're doing gigs, you're doing the travel, and kind of upped your game, I guess, to a point where far from when you first started. Are you doing what you're doing now because the first time you got up, it was such a rush and such a cool thing that's what you decided, this is what I'm going to do? Or did you get inspired by somebody else and just say, I'm just going to go for it and see where this takes me?
I don't know. For me, like, I always, for the longest time as a kid, I always wanted to do, I always loved comedy. Like, I was the kid that this sounds ridiculous, but I would pretend like I would fall asleep on the living room floor, and then my dad would just pass on the sofa. My mom would, whatever she did, go in the back room and yell freak out. And then I would pretend like I was watching. I'd fall asleep. I'd pretend like I was asleep. They wouldn't move me until, you know, 4 a.m. my dad woke up. And I would watch, like, stay up to watch the Tonight Show or Saturday Night Live, or they used to do, what was it, a stand-up spotlight on VH1 that, like, Rosie O'Donnell hosted and stuff. So I always, but I didn't know, like, I had no idea how you even started. Like, I, you know, where do you, like, what's the, you know, where do you use open mic? I didn't know that existed. So I always knew I wanted to. And I think once I found any avenue of getting, of doing it, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is absolutely, and that's why I took any opportunity of when I couldn't find stand-up things in Spokane. I just started doing writing and working on, you know, submitting stuff to websites and producing my own comedy via sketch and a podcast and things like that. Yeah. So,
was there one comedian who inspired you over anybody else?
No. Well, I will. There was a couple times when I first remember like coming online with like a really good joke, and I don't know if I can say this joke, but I'm gonna try it. You can dump it if you want. Don't say it.
You're gonna ruin the whole thing.
It was Norm Macdonald on Weekend Update, and Norm Macdonald's one of my favorite comics. And it was like he said, like, top 10 worst jobs in America just came in. Second worst job in America, crack whore. First worst job in America, assistant crack whore. And like I just his canes and the way he delivered it. And I remember being, I don't know, I was probably like 9 years old or something. I'm like, oh, that's really, that's a great term. That's funny, you know? And so, you know, just, I don't know if there's one specific comic, but I, you know, I my taste varies a lot for comedians, so.
Oh, yeah. So what was the question?
Well, I just wondered, you know,
the Anunnaki. How do you feel about lizard people?
Are they real? To do to travel and do that much stand up. I mean, obviously, you gotta love it. But did you do that after trying it? You know, like an open mic and go, you know, the rush of this is huge, or just out of something.
So I had done a lot of like community theater, like improv type stuff before. I did that for a long time, just as a creative outlet, you know, and. And I knew I wanted to do stand up, and I put it off because I knew that it's what I called improv is like the gateway drug, and then stand up's like shooting the heroin. I mean, there is, especially when you start, just because you've prepared it and it's only you. And I remember when I first started doing it, I almost immediately started doing like 5-6 mics a week. I'd go to like music open mics and try to do time at a mic that nobody wants to hear a comic at, just to get the stage time. Because I had been involved in like, group projects, improv, and you would have to deal with, you know, 5 people's schedules, and maybe you get together and you write a sketch out and everybody talks about it and you got to rehearse. And then maybe you get to do a show 2 months from that date, and it just would take forever. And I remember in the first month I was doing stand up, I was on my way to a thing and I thought of a joke. I, you know, rewrote it in my head. I then, you know, practiced the way I wanted to say it, and I said it that night, and it worked. And I'm like, "This, I'm done with all the other stuff. If I can just rely on myself, then I can be in control of my own failures and my own successes." Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, immediately wanted to. I knew I was like, I want to try to pursue this as best I can, especially from Spokane, where it feels like. I mean, I knew you could get into it by open mics, but it didn't feel like something you could actually pursue from Spokane. And now that I'm pursuing it from Spokane, it definitely feels like something I can't pursue from Spokane.
Just solidified my thoughts I had before.
I was a lot smarter back then. it is definitely a rush. If you have a great set, I mean, it feels great, and it used to feel good for a long time, and now it doesn't feel as good for as long of a time. It's like my tolerance has built like a heroin addict.
It is like a drug. It is. You're just waiting for the next time to go on stage, and I think it's called depression. I think they call it depression. It's like and you just want that next rush.
I do, like I said, I'm about 2 or 3 times a month, and a lot of that is just because I want to be home. I want to have a normal life. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people when they start stand up are single, and they can live on the road, and that's just not a reality for me. You know, I just don't want to do that. I mean, I was gone for a month in November, and that was pretty rough. You know, so I don't really foresee ever doing that. And but those kind of you know, sacrifices make it so that if I'm like preparing for a show, or if I'm like in a hotel room waiting, I'm like, dude, if I'm putting my family through this, I better do as good as I better do my best job tonight and prep for it. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually I was on the East Coast a few months ago, and I was like, it was the first time I think that I got there, and I was like homesick. I was just like, man, this is kind of a bummer. I'm gonna be it was like Wednesday to Sunday run at a club, and I just thought, this is a bummer. But it was like, once I was in the club, once I was around other comics, I all that went away. It was like, this is another level of home. Even though I didn't know any of those comics, I'd never been to that club before, I was just like, this energy has become another kind of home for me, you know. And I couldn't imagine doing stand-up if you hated it. I mean, it would be the worst job. And I've met some burned-out comics, you know, And that would be that'd be worse than any soul sucking day job I could ever imagine. If you just gotta go crank out the sillies,
for drink tokens.
And you know, I mean, it is you're somebody's night out. You know, you're you're helping those people. You know, your pre foreplay or whatever they're doing. You know, you're helping that couple connect. People forget about their problems for an hour. They have a good time. I mean, that's. That's really what I try to find. It gets hard as I get to know people, and as people will be like, hey, we're going to come out to your show. And they're like, we're here to party. And I'm like, yo, dude, my late show is going to be terrible if I party with you right now. So you guys have a great time. Good to see you. High five. Till next time or whatever. But that's, you know, it's nice to be someone's night out. You know, it's like you're their special occasion, right? So I'll never get tired of that.
Yeah. I saw, I think, on some show there, they had Jerry Seinfeld was on the thing, and he was kind of doing a thing, but in between it was a little bit of a documentary on his, you know, his start and where he had arrived and all that. And one of the things that was visual was at the end, that he keeps all of his stuff. You know, all of his jokes, he saves them all on the legal pad, and then he pulled them all out and spread them out on the street. And it was just like covered the whole street with all his writings. Are you guys, what's your writing process, and how do you kind of synthesize that down to stuff you're going to keep, or do you keep stuff on the back burner, or is it works in progress?
Well, Dee falls asleep on the floor.
Yeah. I drink a bunch of cough syrup, take codeine, and wake up and see what I've scribbled in my notebook in the middle of the night. You know,
hieroglyphics?
I mean, personally, live alone. Well, I live with my dog, and if she could talk, she'd say, "Dad yells a lot." I just walk around my house and like rant, or in my car, I just when I'm on road trips to different venues and stuff. You know, if I have 4 hours of drive alone, I'm like a psychopath. I don't even listen to music. I just like talk the whole time.
Yeah,
and if I catch onto something that I keep repeating, or I say something that I kind of laugh at, I will start recording it, and I'll go through and I transcribe it. I actually write it by hand, and then I'll kind of take that to stage, distill it down to figure out the wording and the movements and the kind of the body language, how I want to work it. And if it's working, you keep it. And then I have a master of my entire set in my computer, and I will inject it into wherever it's going to go in my complete, if I'm doing my whole act, and then I have, you know, when I'm doing shorter sets, you go through and figure out what you're going to do out of it, or depend on the crowd and stuff like that. But I mean, God, I just record. I've got audio files that I still need to go through, or scribble notes. And I mean, I don't know about Phil.
I want to ask you something. So you talk to yourself in the car?
Literally, for hours. I don't drive.
And I still do it. Have you ever worried, like, what if someone got this recording, or what if someone?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I'd be in prison. I'd be in Guantanamo Bay getting waterboarded right now.
Somebody, I know a lot of comics that do the same thing. I do the same thing. I've been at shows where someone's about to go on, and they're like looking around. They're like, I need a place to go. And they you'll sneak off to a corner, and they're like, and they're like, you know, talking. But they're rehearsing. They're doing what an actor does. Yeah. But an actor, you know, everybody knows.
Right.
People think a comic's just talking, you know. Everybody knows the actor's doing lines. So if an actor's, like, in the green room, like, today, you know, nobody will think twice about it. But a comic talking in the corner themselves, I mean, that perfectly captures the type of people that can't go to stand-up comedy.
Like schizophrenic. So, like, people think we have someone in the trunk when we're driving down the street.
Man, it gets thick.
Oh, I was just thinking, you know, just a recording of the car trip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Amazing. You don't want it, man. It is a
crazy stream of consciousness. I would love to. What's his name? Elon Musk is working on a neural link that like connects you to the internet, and that is scary as crap to me, because I can't imagine if just someone had this stream of consciousness 24/7. It is a.
Is there four people?
It's insane. So I mean, and there's sometimes I start thinking about stuff. I'm like, what am I doing? What is happening in my head right now?
That's funny, man.
Yeah, or you know, I mean, me personally, I have a what my doctor calls a crippling alcohol addiction. And when I will wake up in the middle of the night and write just crazy stuff on my notepad. I keep a notepad next to my, on my nightstand. I'll call it a nightstand. and like, I wake.
A bunch of bottle of booze.
It's an apple crate. I
steal apples.
Like some of the stuff I wake up and I write, I'm like, what was going on in my head last night that I thought that needed to be written down, you know? Or like, you go back to notes and you're like, you know, or you'll just write something down at some point and think, oh, this is funny and I'll get it later.
Dude,
and then you
I
go
had
back.
A note like that written in my notebook. It just said eyebrows for knees. I was like, what does that mean? What was I thinking?
Yeah, dude, I'd written down. One more I had written down. How are we going to teach people about the birds and the bees when all the bees are dead?
That's just a great standalone joke.
Yeah, like it's not very funny, but it's pretty profound. I think it's like a PSA more than anything else.
I was just thinking as a teacher, I would write that.
Yeah,
smartphones help a lot because I just keep a note. I keep a note tab, and anytime I think of something funny, I'll write it down, or even a story that I know I want to write, and then later I type it out, you know, and then it's just once I do it on stage, and it's just a whittling process, and then it whittles down to make it tighter, and then from there it expands once I start performing it on stage. And
well, yeah, because you write 5 minutes, it becomes. Like 2.5 minutes,
yeah,
and then you can, you know, if you're lucky even, and then you eventually start adding tags to that kind of happen organically on stage, where, you know, you have a line that just kind of pops out, or as you put it in a different part of your set, that can help build it. And
well, there's a difference between stand up and content. I got a podcast, Phil Copp's One Offs. Plug that right now. Is that cool? Yeah, cool. Yeah, Phil. So it's small town news, storytelling, and then we go over animal sexual behaviors. It's about 45 minutes. And I usually have a guest just tell a 5 to 20 minute story. I'll bank it and kind of use it whenever I want. But sometimes I'll just tell my own story for the story portion. And there's times where I'm like, this is a funny story, but it's not tight enough. The laughs aren't tight enough to be a stand-up story, and I don't see how I could do it. I'm like Dave Sedaris, I don't know if you guys know the essay writer. You know, he was like that. I wanted to be like Dave Sedaris when I was a kid. So, yeah, that's a very different form. I mean, Dave Sedaris is very funny. I think he's the funniest humorist of our generation in a lot of ways. I mean, I think he's fantastic, but his act wouldn't translate to a comedy club. You know, he doesn't have the laughs per minute necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing just fine doing what he's doing. He doesn't need to do the club circuit.
His nightstand might be a little bit different.
Yeah,
right?
He's got two apple crates.
Yeah. But he was like, that's what I wanted to be. I mean, and he, you know, his vulnerability and his work, and he grows as a writer constantly. I mean, that's really all you hope for as an artist, just so that you keep progressing, you keep creating, and you just keep you keep expanding.
They have that, like, that kind of the generic 10,000 hour rule, you know?
Yeah,
that
yeah. I mean,
so as a craft, I mean, as you're talking about that, you're constantly refining. How many years did I mean, you're 10 years into it, and
about
several
six.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the stand up years are way different than like other content years. Yeah. Comedy in some form or fashion is 10 years. Stand up, like solid stand up for me has been three, you know, probably. So, and those are, I mean, they're different muscles. They all help for the same thing. Doing improv helps being a comic, right? I mean, but, as for pure stand up, I mean, God, that it's the thing where everyone who's been doing it forever tells you it takes 10 years. I mean, it literally is a 10-year thing where, part of it is work ethic. People who gravitate to jobs where they can sleep all day and smoke weed and they don't start till 8 p.m. are generally a little lazy. If you can live that lifestyle and are a little motivated, that you can up that timeline a little bit, you can hit hit ceilings a little faster, different plateaus a little bit quicker, but it's nothing. Well, there's no shortcut.
The 10,000 hours, I mean, you can write and get better at writing by continuing to write, but stand up, the only way you can do stand up is by being in front of an audience and doing it. You can practice all you want in your car, and that's not going to hurt you. I think that can only help you, but the only way you can really learn how to read the energy of a room is by doing stand-up. And so building that 10,000 hours slows down considerably when you start out. You're doing 5-minute sets, 10-minute mm-hmm. sets, then you're doing half an hour sets. And a lot of people, aren't even headlining until 6-7 years in. And so then, even when you're doing hour sets, if you're working every weekend, you're still only doing 5 hours at a time.
Yeah.
So that 10,000 hours, it takes a long time, and there's a different – you don't want to be the guy that panics on stage or forgets. You got to know how to handle yourself in multiple different scenarios, and the only way to do that is by actually putting yourselves in those situations. How are you going to do if you burn through all your material and you still got 15 more minutes to do, and you're like, I gotta go back.
That just makes me sweat thinking about that.
Man. Dude, that's
the worst
that's
thing
real
is
life, man.
Like you're just looking for that light.
Yeah,
and
you're like, uh-oh, I might have to talk to these people. So it's, there's all these different scenarios that you realize that you eventually have to deal with. And
so when you see a comedian, these established comedians that do these specials and stuff, and I mean, you got to have a whole new appreciation for what went into that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there is no shortcut. I mean, there's. I'm sure Phil gets all the time too. Comics will come up and new open micers will come up and want to talk to you after, and they're how do I get on a show? How do I do this? How do I get? And you're like, man, this is your third open mic. Like, you should probably focus on just writing. I'm like, maybe just because I'm jaded at this point, but it's like, let's tell them, hit four mics a week for a year and then come back and talk to me if you're still interested in doing this. Then that's probably something you might want to pursue. But most people just like, I do 1 3-minute open mic a week and just kind of meander here and there. It's like, you're never... You can't get better than
that.
Yeah,
I got into that D club that that Deese was talking about a little bit before. Deese was doing it, and some of those older guys that had done the road and had careers that worked at that club a lot, they told me it was like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, so just pace yourself, buddy.
Do you notice more and more people in town trying the comedy thing? Is that something that...
Actually, I think the club made it die down a little bit. In some ways, because when there was a D club, Thursday night would be an open mic, and then there'd be all these other little open mics. Well, people kind of, a lot of those open mics stopped. I mean, I don't know as much about what's happening in Spokane right now, but I do know that I think people only saw the club, so you only have people doing one big, they want to do the club each week, where it's like, well, you're forgetting about the Chinese restaurant on Friday night and the late night burrito place and the... And there still is. You can go find that stuff and you go develop that stuff, but I think it's sort of rebuilding itself because they're trying to. I mean, the club is trying to build a roster of MCs and talent that they can use locally.
That only benefits them to cultivate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Local.
Yeah,
talent.
Yeah, and I mean, I've lived in Spokane, for most of my life, and I've seen artists and talented people. They put together, if it's a band, they get a killer 3 songs and it's like, they're gone. Comics, they get 10 minutes, they're gone. Actors, improvisers get a couple credits, they're gone. It's just like, there's like this exodus that happens with people when they have a talent and they're good at it after about 2 years, whereas like the incubation period in a bigger market like Seattle might be more like 5 years, 7 years before you move on to a market where there's bigger and better professional opportunities.
Have we had local comedians kind of make it big?
Well, Dan Cummins is certainly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Cummins is certainly a drawing comic now with a very popular podcast. There's a guy in Post Falls who does very well. He's a big cruise ship guy. But he's probably home like 4 weeks a year.
Oh, gosh.
His name is Alvin Williams. He's a great comic. He runs a couple rooms. But, he... there's those two guys. There was So Spokane, the history of Spokane comedy
is a pamphlet. It's a sorted
no,
history.
This is what I've been told. In the 80s, a lot of like older vaudeville style era type comedy, not necessarily they were vaudeville, but they still kind of had that sort of vibe, came here and retired. And there were all these little rooms that popped up. And these guys were great comedians. They were great live performers, you know. But now you look at it and you're like, that something feels off. It's like outdated, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of that was happening. I mean, there's a guy who's 80 now, and he was a very popular touring comic. He was on
Ed Sullivan.
He was on the Ed Sullivan show. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, Jay Wanda Walker. He was kind of a legend. 50. Yeah, 50. He had a career for 50 years. Man, my first feature set was opening for him.
He's a hoot.
Yeah,
he's
quite
a guy.
Yeah, that guy. He's a hilarious comic. I went to Jay was one of the first guys I worked with. He always wore a suit. And he always like had cologne on and everything, and so I was like, I'm gonna open for him. I'm gonna be a young comic that like dresses nice. None of the young comics dress nice, so I wore a vest. I wore like nice jeans, nice not jeans but like you know slacks and everything. I show up to this gig. Jay's dressed in like a sweatshirt and jeans. It's like a hole you like see the side of his man areola. I show up and he doesn't mention how he's dressed at all. And then the MC shows up, who was his son and is a pretty experienced comic. And he looks at me and he's like, "Dude, you wore the wrong clothes for Hayden, Idaho." He does a lot of crowd work. And one time he looked at somebody in the crowd and he's like, he looked to a woman and he goes, "Oh, is this your husband?" He's like, "No, my husband's been dead for 4 years." And he goes, "Well, he looks great." I mean, just like that, you know? Oh, man. And he – I mean, I got to see guys like that. And they don't, they're not as active as much anymore. But I just I loved that kind of thing when I started seeing these
just a solid joke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he didn't know. That's what she was going to say. But after seeing him enough times, you realize, like, he's got 5 hours of quips he can give to the crowd that he's developed over the years. Yeah. So, you know, there are comics who have come from Spokane, but usually it's, like, just your road dog type guys, you know. And if – you know, it's hard. Like, you know, I don't want to fall into that trap because it gets exhausting, and then you start to lead a non-authentic life. You know, I mean, it's hard to make people relate to you when you're like, "What'd you do today? Oh, I took 3 naps and watched cable for 4 hours."
Right.
You know, so
or on the other end, you know, Ellen DeGeneres is talking about being rich the whole time. You know, in her newest special.
Although the way she does it, is there a back of the plane? I've never been there. I mean, that's so great. Like she does it in her style. I mean, she's got such a defined style. You know, so. And that is the hardest thing. If you do the road, it's easy to get really hacky and sort of easy jokes. But you know, the real challenge in stand up is creating an act that nobody can recreate. I mean, to perform in a way that is irreplaceable. Like people could tell your joke, but if they're just saying the same words, it's not going to go the same way because the way you've formed talking. And that's where the 10,000 hours comes in. Because that's where it takes 10 years to develop a style, you know.
So as getting to be veteran people in the business, what's the
– Are you making
wow,
fun
thank
of
you.
Us,
oh, man. No. Are we being catfish?
there's good advice and bad advice. If it's coming from
a comic, it's bad advice. Probably.
I was just going to ask, so what is bad advice for somebody, you know, maybe that you've learned through experience that, you know, somebody that would be starting is like, don't listen to this. This is bad advice.
Well, I mean, it depends on who it's coming from. I think, you know, luckily in Spokane, most comics are, anywhere between amicable to really good friends. So most of the time, no one's trying to sabotage. I think in bigger markets, there's probably more of that and people trying to sabotage. It's just more competitive. You know, I think bad advice is usually pretty obvious. I mean, really, the only nice advice for a comic is like, hit a bunch of mics, keep doing, you know, get on the, you know, just keep working, keep getting out there. And then, like, it's just a little bit of motivation. I think a lot of, I mean, that's how I gained traction, is I just started going out and doing shows, producing shows, and that got me a ton of stage time. And that helped me a bunch, where I don't think a lot of people have that ability or motivation to do it.
Right.
And they just wait for things to come to them. I mean, I've met a lot of funny people who are like, oh, yeah, I get a gig like every 8 months. I get a paid gig. I'm like, man, you should work harder. I think that's
A lot of comics don't want to put themselves out there because it's mainly, it's not like there's a lot of rejection. It's like there's mainly rejection. Yeah. Like but.
Oh, God, I'm putting together a spring tour with another comic, and I've literally sent out, I think, 60, 70 emails, and I mean, I've got five responses in a positive. So, well, to be fair, a couple of those places I was just like, hey, you still want to do this? But I mean, bad advice, you're going to know if it's bad advice, I think. You know, it's just the only thing you can do is just do it and do it more in practice.
And, the hard thing is, there's no one path. You know, there's a lot of people that work the clubs go up that way, but. You know, that's a rough road because clubs pay the least because they're the best. They're the most fun places to perform. There's other people that do cruise ships.
There's also demand, you know. The clubs have a demand to get – people want to be there.
Yeah, and there's a ton of competition to get into them, so they typically pay the least. A lot of people do cruise ships. That's not the right path for some people because maybe that's it. You can get too used to the money and then you don't want to do other stuff. There's people who do – I mean, NACA, you know, that's a college circuit. And then that's valuable because if you do well in the college circuit, you're a lot more likely to develop a social media following because a lot of those kids are going to follow you. They're a lot more tapped. I mean, they'll follow you right in the crowd, right?
Yeah.
But like my act, I mean, I'm 38 years old. I talk a lot about family stuff. Like, there's no reason for me to invest my time and energy trying to get onto the NACA circuit. I'm going to, you know, I do a bit right now that is very – that works really well. It's about breast pumps. I do an impression of a breast pump on stage. If I did that for a college
top
crowd,
three
they would be like, what is he talking about?
Great. Make the bad man stop.
Yeah. No, show me where the comic touched me in my brain, please. But yeah, I mean, it's just, and so, you know, it wouldn't relate to a college crowd. I know a lot of people were having success doing the NACA circuit, and I've just looked at it and thought, I'd be better off, you know, going another route. And it's like one person does something on social media and it hits hard. And what you'll see is 10 other people will start doing the same thing. They'll make a similar video. Steve Hofstetter is this guy that has built a following around heckler videos. He comes into a venue. He's got three cameras on him. And I mean, if you just looked at his YouTube channel, you'd think this dude's getting heckled every single show.
Yeah.
But he's But what's happening is he's recording every single show, and maybe each week he's got a 5-minute clip or whatever, you know. And so then you start seeing once he started getting traction with that, you started seeing just tons of comics like comic owns heckler or whatever type videos coming out. And it's like, well, he already forged that path. That's his path. Yeah. You got to find a different one, you know.
So, well, Eric,
we're coming up on the end of the hour. So. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Sweet. All right. Time flies. What are we doing in hour two?
First, you're going to tell us what's coming up for you guys, where people can see you.
Oh, well, that is a great question. This Sunday, actually, well, if anyone wants to go to Lewiston, Idaho, tomorrow on the 22nd, I'll be at Shooters. That's a show I do once a month down there. Spokane Comedy Club on the 24th. I'll be with Michael Glatzmeyer. He's a comic I work with a bunch. So you can find us at Nearly Famous on Facebook. And big one, April 5th. I do a once a month late night talk show at the Comedy Club called The Social Hour After Dark. It's a really fun show. We do, you know, it's just basically like a live talk show. So that's come out to that. I don't know who I have on that show yet, but if you go follow me on Facebook, you can find out. So
cool. Right on. How about you, Phil?
All right. March 27th. I am in Crickets in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And actually what's really great. There's a gal that started in Spokane. Her name is Chelsea Toll. And she has gone to Seattle and started doing really well. She started hitting like 7 mics a week, and she's sort of risen up the ranks pretty quickly. She's already getting booked on shows. So she's back in the area, and she's going to be opening. And that's going to be a great time. Crickets used to be a weekly room. It would be a Wednesday night room, and they would hit comics traveling through the area, either to Seattle or going from Seattle to somewhere else. So they haven't done comedy there for a while. They have kind of a comedy following, though, because they used to be at every single Wednesday. So we're doing it in the back room that's a little private. It's only $5, and that's going to be a great show. There's only 70 tickets, so I would say definitely go. You go to Crickets, you can go to the event page, or you can go to my website, Philip Kopp, K-O-P Comedy, and you just hit that link. But yeah, man, you should come out if you're listening
right
to this.
Right on. I hope people do, and I'd like to come too. Hey, thanks for the last.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun.
Thanks
for coming. Good luck to you, and we'll see you on the web or in person or somewhere.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production
and part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!